All righty. I know. I see some of you swiveling those hips. That's pretty good. Composer, arranger, vocalist, and pianist, and child prodigy, Mary Lou Williams, and her top-notch band performing live at the Pythian Temple in New York City in 1952. The tune, a jazz standard, was composed by Duke Ellington and performed by many, many musicians. But judging from the crowd's reaction, there's no doubt that Mary Lou and her band brought new energy to it. We have Vic Dickinson on trombone, Harold Shorty Baker, to whom she was briefly married, on trumpet, Morris Lane on tenor sax, Newell John on guitar, Ed Safransky on bass, and Don LeMond on drums. Interestingly, the Pythian Temple, which is at 135 West 70th Street, is still there, but it's no longer the temple. It is now a high-end condo complex. But it was a place, of course, where the Knights of Pythias would convene. They had about 120 different chapters in the metro area, and they held their big meetings there, but they also rented out the joint to performances like this and even to recording sessions. Well, this is life. This is life. You can still go see it at 135 West 70th Street. I think they still maintain a portion of the facade of the old building. But Mary Lou Williams is somebody you really got to know her. You really have to know her. An extraordinary musician that did quite a bit of composing, even for Ellington, and wrote spectacular pieces of her own. So there you are. Sea Jam Blues. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Free Your Mind Friday. And that means you're putting on the table things that we ought to be considering or debating or just getting to know. Whatever it is that you're offering today, that keep that in mind. We've had a very rough week. A very crazy week. It's like the whole world went nuts. But you can talk about whatever it is you wish us to consider. That's your call at 888-874-4888. A couple of things. On Monday, we are advised that we will not be on the air live on Monday because it is, I think, George Washington's birthday or something. And so you will probably be hearing a repeat program on Monday from me. Also, I had intended Monday to be the big reveal of a talk I'm giving in New York on March the 11th. And I want you right now to just set aside the date, planning to be there. Apart from me talking, which is one thing, I just want to shake your hand. I just want to say hello, receive or give a hug, and say, so you're the person. I'm seeing your voice for the first time. It's going to be at the Community Church of New York. I'll give you more details on it. For now, I just want you to set aside the date, March the 11th, and we'll have a great introduction and, in some cases, a reintroduction to each other on that date. I've been invited. I'm so honored to have been invited. One of our listeners, as a matter of fact, has played a major role in all of this, and he was the person who extended the invitation in behalf of the church. It's David Strawn, and I'll be meeting him for the first time. I look forward to it. So mark your calendars for March 11, and I'll tell you more about what we're going to do. But I just want you to mark the date so it's set aside and nothing else interferes with that, so that we can kind of get a little fellowshipping going on that date. All right, let's get down to business. 888-874-4888. Bill from New Jersey, you start us off today.
Good afternoon, Yatrice.
Good afternoon, Bill. How you doing?
Good, good. I had to call in today. I've been waiting for Friday for this.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I believe a lot of your listeners look forward to Friday for this reason, other than the weekend. But what I called about was earlier in the week, you spoke on the Black Panther movie and your take on it. And as you know, I don't always call in to agree. Sometimes I disagree, but I try not to be disagreeable. But on this subject, we are so in lockstep that we could win a three-legged race. I believe that this is an insult. This movie is an insult to Black people, and it really needs to be talked about more. We need to not be going to see it. We shouldn't spend a dollar on it. I've been saying this for weeks to anyone that would listen, although most people say, oh, that's ridiculous. We've got a black superhero. I'm definitely going to that. What makes it even worse is this whole thing of putting it out during Black History Month as though this is black history. This is not black history. There were Black Panthers in Black History. That's Black History. And to repurpose and reclaim this name from some of our greatest superheroes, the Black Panthers, and move it over to some comic book, farcical, mythical thing, which, you know, a lot of children will, you know, have no knowledge of the Black Panthers. And this will now be, when you say Black Panther, this is what they'll think of. It's a mythical place in Africa of high technology. And I actually heard a mainstream radio host, it was on at the gym, you know, it's not something I listen to, say that a secret society, a secret country in Africa of high technology, that's where you could hide it because no one would be looking for it there. Oh, of course not. There's no high technology in Africa. That's ridiculous.
There's no high technology. Listen, let me ask you, what about the counter-argument? What about the counter-argument that, look, this is art. People are entitled, the creators of art have a kind of license, if you will, to push their art in any direction they choose. They can present their art in any way they choose because that's the whole beauty of art. Art is a medium also of firing up the imagination and all these wonderful things. Why are we so troubled about this artwork, if you will?
We are troubled because of it is taking advantage of Black people's need for lack of self-esteem and repurposing. Forget about those guys, those real superheroes. Forget about those, and let's just go with this one that we find acceptable, and come and bring us all of your money and bring your kids and forget about that. If you took a great hero of just about any other culture and said, okay, forget about him, them, and let's have a comic book to replace it, they would protest. They would protest in every way. You couldn't take a great hero of Holocaust survivors and make a comic book hero out of his name. You couldn't do it. No way. But our heroes are fair game, and this is not art. I'm all for art, but this is not art. This is capitalism. This is capitalizing on your need for heroes and giving you a hero that we have decided is okay with us because it doesn't exist. It's a fake. Now, give us all your money and sit, like you said, in the theater, happy fools. Happy fools, and we rake in your cash. That's what
right.
This is. And it is insulting. It is insulting. I am insulted by it, and I wish we wouldn't go to it, but I know we will. And
yes,
that's
indeed.
That's really why.
And then there's all the other spin-offs. You know, you have to have the merchandising part of it taking off as well at the same time. You have the kids are going to harangue their parents. I got to have this, and I got to have that.
If you notice the toys that I've seen so far, the commercials for some Jaguar, Black Panther mask and paws, there's only black children in the commercial, which, of course, is because, of course, white kids won't want this. We can't sell this to white kids. They won't be interested in it. Why is that? Only black kids in the commercial. Look at them and see. And then the sponsorship, right away, the Black Panther is doing commercials for Lexus. Black people like Lexus. Go buy a Lexus. Black Panther likes Lexus. It disgusts me in every way.
You got to start it off in fine fashion. And I thank you for your contribution today. Hopefully,
I thank you for bringing it up.
An opportunity for bringing, some other thoughts to this whole marketing boondoggle. Thank you so much for calling in today. Russ from New York, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, Latrice. I appreciate...
Hi!
Hello, how are you?
I'm okay. How's about you?
Good. Like Bill before me, I appreciate the forum, for bringing up these issues and stuff. This is great. A year and a half ago, I became retired, and I suddenly had all this time available to me to educate myself about a lot of stuff that I hear things about, but I don't have the time to, devote, to teaching myself. So I've really, been investigating a lot of things, and, the thing that is starting to trouble me is, we hear all these issues, whatever, there's a handful out there that you can choose from, global warming, the government, Trump, whatever happens to be the issue that you want to focus on. And there seems to be one that I'm focusing on that I think maybe people aren't speaking enough about. And the one that bothers me the most is this whole 5G grid that's being rolled out. And I just had a smart meter installed in my house, and, the neighbors were, we were talking about it, and I started to research it because I had heard previously on, shows like Gary's and others about the dangers of smart meters and this and that, so I started to educate myself about it. And it's to me, it seems like it's a very important issue because if you look at the evidence, you'll see that it's being rolled out globally. And it's an organized effort, and we're being told that the reason for this smart meter network is just to make it good for us in terms of efficiency, using our utilities in an efficient manner and a cost-conscious manner, and we'll be in touch with all the different aspects of our use. We'll have all these appliances that'll be communicating, and they'll be telling us which ones we're wasting money on and which ones we're not. But then, I tend not to trust the motive as that being the primary motive behind this because I start to look at all the other variables involved. And if you just
now,
look
before
at the...
you go, before you go any further, could you give us a very tight synopsis of what the 5G grid is, and what, why is it now becoming such an issue globally?
Okay. Well, the term 5G means fifth generation. So a lot of people are currently using 4G for their cell phones and their smartphones. And prior to that, it was 3G and I believe 2G. But the number is misleading because you'll think, well, 2 is twice as strong as 1 and 3 is a little bit stronger than 2. But actually, 5G is tremendously stronger than 4G. It's been used militarily. That's been its primary application. So
now, one of the things I want to ask is that whether it's 2G, 3G, 4G, or 5G, the bottom line is that government is, that's the taxpayers, are looked to fund the implementation of a 5G system in the same way that the internet that as we know now was actually a government funded project for the most part, the argument being that a project this big could have so much, could lend so much advancement to all people all over the world. Fine. But it turns out, doesn't it, that the while the taxpayer literally assumed the greatest portion of the responsibility for financing these kinds of projects, we have the private sector, which did not put in the kind of money and investment in creating these systems. They now have a gift with the basics in place, and they can build upon it without having to invest in it. Is with the development of 5G, is there any, in your view, is there any difference in approach to the government, to a government saying, well, look, we have laid cables, we under the ocean, we have done a lot of stuff to advance the concept of the internet, and people have profited billions and billions of dollars from it. I don't know that they've put money back into the bucket in proportion to the benefits that they yielded from it. What, in your view, is different or promises to be different about the funding formula for 5G projects?
Well, you know, that's an interesting issue that you bring up regarding the funding and who's going to capitalize these projects. But irregardless of who actually pays for the infrastructure, I think there's some other issues that are far more devastating than that. As I understand it, I believe it's I don't believe that the funding for this is going to be coming from tax dollars, although indirectly it would be. I think they'll be able to probably justify increases to rates to pay for a certain percentage of the infrastructure, like, you know, the cost of the meters themselves, the smart meters. But there's two aspects of this rollout that bother me more than anything. One is the true motivation for wanting to have a 5G network globally, and also the health hazards of being exposed to an inundation of microwaves that are going to be at a level far, far greater than anything we've ever been exposed to before. If you look at the theory behind this whole thing, first of all, 5G requires a huge infrastructure technologically for it to be accomplished. It's not like 4G where you have these cell towers in the distance that you come across periodically. These things will have to be put up every 850 feet due to the nature of the technology itself. And, you know, that's a whole education in itself, looking at the nature of 5G. They call it millimeter waves. They're small waves. They have trouble penetrating certain things like walls and trees. So what they do to compensate for that is they need to have an increased number of antennas. So you'll have them all over the place. And then
this is a very complex subject. I'm glad that you have introduced it to us as something that we need to look into far more finitely, to take the micro view, because it is promising to be quite a daunting project. But I agree with you, there are way too many unanswered questions at this moment, even in its initial stage of presentation. And we have to consider the environmental impact. We have to consider the health impact. We have to consider also that we can't trust this industry. We have
Absolutely.
No reason to trust it.
Remember, Mr. Clapper, was he the head of the NSA at the time when he testified in front of Congress?
Yes.
So at that point, you know, they're just using the telephone wires and the internet as a way of surveying us without us knowing about it. And then he's testifying in front of Congress lying that they don't do such things. So ultimately, they're going to use whatever technology is available to perform that function of surveillance. So if you understand the specifics of 5G, just the technology and what it's offering the corporations and the government to do over us, surveillance-wise and every other way, these waves, this technology is incredible what it's capable of doing.
I want us to return to this, building on what you have presented today, because it's a pretty complex thing. And I'm saying, too, that we have the benefit of history to teach us that never mind what people say as the goodies, the bennies of stuff, we have more than enough evidence to legitimize our concerns about it, especially in this increasingly warmongering world. This is yet another gadget for militarism,
right,
as well. So we have to have our senses about it. But I'm so thankful that you introduced it to us today. I haven't done anything really in discussing this new. Well, it's not new. It's already, I think, it's kind of been in the works without them actually saying
the technology
it.
Itself has been around for a long time, 5G, but the actual application in the terms of a global grid, that's the new part with the smart meters.
Well, thank you so much for bringing this up today, Russ. I appreciate it.
All right,
let's go to
you.
Harvey from Berkeley. You're on the air, Harvey. How you doing?
Hello, wonderful Idris.
Hey, wonderful Harvey.
I really appreciate I want to say that I really appreciate your clarity of thought, incredible wisdom, and leadership quality, and I say Utrice for president.
I thought you liked me.
Well,
so what's
on your mind today? What's on the table? In January, New York City's mayor de Blasio declared that the city's massive retirement pension fund is divesting $6 billion from the oil, coal, and gas industry, as well as suing the five biggest oil companies, including Exxon and Chevron.
What I'd like to talk about today
You're on the air.
Is you had the speech by Nkrumah from Ghana. Back in the 50s, I believe it was, when they so-called became quote-unquote independent, I that really rang a bell with me, because it made me think about the carving up of Africa at the Berlin Conference of 1884 and the winter of 1884-85, when the imperial powers carved up Africa and, you know, took their cut. And this brings us up to the time when Ghana was supposedly made, quote-unquote, independent, and Nkrumah's speech when he talked about such a rich continent with poor people in it, and that's the state of Africa. But what comes to my mind is something I think people need to get, you know, into their head. Even though, for example, Ghana was supposedly declared, quote-unquote, independent, and went from colonialism, actually, to neocolonialism. And most of the countries in Africa are in that state today. In other words, an empire does not really release its power, even though they don't directly control the territory like in colonial times. They get local people to do it for them. And
well, that was the point of the speech as well. Nkrumah predicted that this is the process that
yes,
they will
yes.
recolonize, and he
yes,
this was what he was warning against.
And that's what's going on, because they don't want to give up what they have, and so they may change the form of governance, but they don't give it up. And we have to get that into our heads that anyone who thinks he's so-called independent, he better understand the game. And if you don't play that game, you'll wind up dead, or you'll be deposed somehow, and that happened in Nkrumah. So the point is that the empire is worldwide. It has its tentacles all over the place. All these smaller countries that had been colonies, they still have their tentacles there. And people ought to understand this idea of democracy just doesn't exist. I mean, if you don't play the game with these empires, and the chief one is the United States right now, you're going to be toast. So that's the thing that came to my mind as I was listening to that speech.
Thank you. It was a prescient speech, and you can hear in his passionate voice, you can hear him pleading for people to turn things around before they have to turn things around, you know, out of necessity, but that they had the advantage of a cushion to anticipate what the former colonial and imperial powers were going to do and to get prepared for it. This is the reason I shared the speech. It was such an extraordinary speech. Thank you so much for your call today. Carlisle from Queens, I believe you were up next.
Hi.
Hello.
Yatri, hi, how are you?
Okay, how are you doing, Carlisle?
I am doing as well as I can. I called in earlier when I was in a more convenient location, and I got through now that I'm in a bit of an inconvenient location, but I'll do my best to speak as I could. I want to address the comments made in regards to the Black Panther movie. I find that the approach to viewing the movie, how the movie is being viewed by some, your first caller that called in was in agreement with you as it not being a good thing. But I would like to propose a different perspective. And the perspective is this. One, we must never, ever put the education of our children into the hands of any one institution. I'll give you a perfect example with my life. I have four children, the oldest of which is 9 years old. And in all the years that he's been here, he has never seen a superhero movie. And when I saw the preview for Black Panther, I decided I will see this movie with my 9-year-old son. But before I see this movie, I would give him the history of that name, the Black Panther, who they are, what they stood for, and what happened to them in this country. Because, you see, that's my responsibility. That's not the responsibility of Hollywood, and it's not the responsibility of teachers had he gone to the regular school because he's homeschooled. So the first thing is that we tend to put too much responsibility on the external world to educate our children and to embrace us. Now, from a creative standpoint, because I am an artist, I see so many things in this movie that if we extract it and expound on it to explanation and demonstration to our children, to the youth, it can go far beyond anything that those behind the movie, the big producers I'm speaking of, have intended. I mean, some simple things like the different characters that are played, to see actual Africans and African-Americans side by side. I mean, it conjures up the memory of what Garvey always told us about building the relationship, especially that of economic relationship with Africa. Because here we are, another caller calling, and you're talking about the recolonization of Africa, where we in this country, in the United States, despite our position, have had the opportunity to build economic relationships with Africa. So now we have an opportunity to start building a relationship through this movie, if we were to take on the responsibility of educating our children on top of what they've been exposed to. Because we cannot negate the fact that these children are consuming information. However, if the information that we can have them consume can be explained, it would go a far, it would be much better to have them view this movie in conjunction with the history of the name, the history of the people behind the name and what they stood for and what they did, as well as who these characters are, that Africa does have something, whether it be technologically in terms of actual technology or just the wisdom of Africa. I mean, there's so many things we can expound on, but we are limiting it to just Hollywood.
But, you know, here's the thing. I appreciate your point, and I mean, in and of themselves, there's merit to what it is you're saying. I am a fundamentalist in this regard. I think that the mere idea of bringing this project is so offensive. We don't need to have deep discussions about it. We just don't. And they do this because, and they're proving over and over again, there's nothing to fear from the Black community. You could do anything with their history, their culture, and you know, capitalize on it. It's just, that's what it is. In its rawest sense, it has nothing to do with educating people about their culture. Nothing. And I refuse to have the movie industry presume that it can give me some homework. The homework now being I will have to undertake an educational project because they decided to make a movie. Rather, I think our position should be we shut it down because it has committed the cardinal sin of annihilating or seeking to annihilate culture. Giving false information about a culture, whole blast in your face. They have nothing to fear. And rather than us just saying, look, we don't need to have a conversation about this. This is not something that is so deep that it warrants intellectual inquiry. It's about a bunch of people with money coming up with a great idea of breaking free from the regular market, because the regular market is shrinking, and exploring the idea, just like colonialism or imperialism, here's a new market. How do we capture a new market? We give them stuff that has to do with their psychological need, an overwhelming psychological need to be comforted. It is a disgraceful premise. And that's what we ought to shut down. Why we ought to shut it down? No discussions. We don't need to have any discussions about it. Will they be this casual about a movie on the Holocaust? No. And nobody has to tell them that. They'll know this intuitively, that there will be a price to pay for distorting the cultural heritage of groups that clearly are very powerful. But black folks are not feared. You can insult black people. You can distort their culture. You can do anything you want and get away with it. And you have black people participating in their own cultural annihilation. This is a very strong point. So I think we're over intellectualizing about this. It's cut and dried to me. You slipped up here. Big time. It was intentional. We know your motives. They're not good. They're not helping us in any way. You're not saying, okay, we make a movie, even if it's atrocious, but we're giving back X millions of dollars to rebuild a stretch of an inner city community. No, you're not doing any of that. It's a raw deal to make as much money as possible, utilizing the medium of black culture and history and the old tools of subjugation. You know, play to their emotional needs, play to their psychology, bring blacks into it to water down the impact, to make it a little bit more user-friendly. No, I'm not fooled by any of this. This is a movie that shouldn't exist. Instead, how many people know about Oscar Michaud? The first black major movie filmmaker we ever had, who had to load up his films in the trunk of his car and work the Chitlin circuit in order to make a living and to provide a living for actors and so forth. Now, people could have aesthetic discussions about whether culturally the movies came up to snuff. I'm not having that argument. My argument is Oscar Michaud is the father, the exemplar of what is possible if people choose to affirm their culture and to harness the economic potential of their art. He had to do it because, of course, he made movies in a trenchantly racist society. But when you look at his work, you have no doubts that first and foremost in his mind was, how will my work serve my people? This thing that we have here, I wouldn't even waste time discussing it. I wouldn't waste my time going to see it because it has profoundly betrayed a basic principle. You do not exploit cultures this way and make it appear that this is a deep cultural experience. No, it's not. It's all money, raw profit. And on top of that, now the agency is to open up new markets because you're not doing well in your old markets. Your markets are shutting down. The movie industry is in a state of crisis. It worked so well when the country was so divided and before the advent of individual ways that people could satisfy their cultural needs without having to go to a movie theater. Now these folks are freaking out And this movie is not so much about the Panthers, blah, 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 blah. It is about opening up new, for them, new avenues for revenue. That's it. And if they have to contribute to the destruction of your culture, the gross disrespect of your history, they'll do it because it's about money. I'm saying the time is more than overdue to teach these vagabonds a lesson. There are things you just don't mess with. You don't play with that. And if you do, you deserve to be shut down forever. You shouldn't be able to make another penny, not from the black community. That's my position. So I'm not even daring to get intellectual about this. This is nothing intellectual. There's nothing intellectual to discuss here. This is, what do you do with vagabonds who in this day and age still insist that they need not be afraid of you, even as they need you to even live, to be viable? And they still pile on the disgrace. They still pile on the insult. They still distort. They still are doing that propaganda work of reducing other people's history. Absolutely convinced no injury will accrue to them. That's my position. Peter from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Yes, how are you?
Fine, Peter. How are you doing?
Great, great. First time caller. Me and my wife listen to you all the time. We think you're great.
Oh, thank you, Peter. And wife of Peter, I'm so glad that you are part of our family.
Yes, yes. I just want to make a brief comment on about the movie. I haven't seen it, but when I first heard it, Black Panther, I always thought of, you know, the historical records of the Black Panthers. Someone asked me inside the store, did you see Black Panther? I said, no, but I heard it was good, because I'm thinking that the historical record of the Black Panther, Hollywood is only good about one thing. They're trying to make money. That's their whole thing. And not only was that, they messed up. I want to see the movie about Noah, because, you know, I believe in the biblical narrative. And they totally messed that movie up. Even the Muslims, which narratives of the Quran and the Bible are similar, they were an outrage, because they said, this is rubbish. They only think about making a dollar, just like you said a mouthful, about making money, nothing else. And you can believe it, they're going to come out with a part two.
Great, but if nobody goes, they could make part 10.
You're right.
Nobody should go.
You're right. No one should go. Exactly.
Because it's more than making money. It's making money and serving the standing propaganda order, which is to diminish people of color. It's a dual track. They have to please Hollywood, and they have to please this racist society. And they will therefore develop products that appear to recognize, and, you know, this idea of inclusivity and diversity, blah, 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 blah. But they really are reinforcing the worst kinds of stereotypes and the racial order in this country. That's what they're doing. So this is not something that should even be in our realm of consideration. It should not even be a choice. We should do exactly as they've treated us. You don't exist. I don't care how many movies you make. You don't exist.
Right.
It's as simple as that.
Exactly. And one more question I need to ask you. I was thinking, like, in Africa now, there are, as long as there's anything of any value in Africa, like gold and diamond, plutonium, oil, the forces that be are going to always have their hands in the pockets of Africa to try to control the wealth. And,
not if, as Kwame Nkrumah was pleading for, not if people develop insight and move to shut that down. You know, Ghana was called what? The Gold Coast.
Coast, yeah, right.
That was the name of that country. At least they put that name to it because there was so much gold there.
Right. Well, but what do you think about the Chinese? I'm sorry.
Sorry.
Go ahead. What do you think about the Chinese now, their involvement in big time in Africa and in the Caribbean?
Yes. Well, I see we have our music is telling us we're ending. We'll continue the discussion, however. Have yourselves a great weekend. Thank you for your patience. And we will join back with each other on Tuesday. Don't forget, Monday we're not on live. Bye-bye.